Welcome to the Education Marketing Leader Podcast with Chris Raposo. If you're looking to dive into the latest industry insights, draw inspiration from education success stories, or just want to sharpen your marketing skills, you're in the right place. Here, we bring you a diverse range of voices from experts and leaders in the field, offering you a unique blend of professional development and practical strategies. Whether you want to understand your audience better, stay updated with the latest tech trends in marketing, or expand your professional network, we've got you covered. So while you're driving on your morning commute or winding down after a busy day, let's explore the dynamic world of education marketing together.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Education Marketing Leader. Today, my guest is Seth Odell. A lot of you know him from LinkedIn and from various podcasts. He is the founder and CEO of Canahoma. Seth, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So Seth is an industry expert, and today we're talking about higher ed industry at large, where it is and where it's going. So state of the industry, Seth, higher ed is facing multiple cliffs. We all heard about the enrollment cliff. Few heard about the search cliff, and there's also what some people call the perception cliff. How would you describe the current state of the industry, and which of these challenges do you think is most urgent for institutions to address?
Great question. So yeah, higher ed is increasingly crowded and complex. More than ever, there's more competition, there's more pressure. Demand by and large is down, even though we did see some growth in freshmen last year. So more or less demand flat or down, competition is up, decreasing consumer confidence in higher ed, increasing price pressure. If you're a marketer in higher ed, today's the best day you're going to have for the next 10 years. Like, it only gets harder from here. And so as far as what are the challenges are most urgent, I think it really comes down to individual institutions. By and large, if you're a traditional undergraduate recruiting institution, you're definitely facing demographic changes with the enrollment cliff, as well as the collapse of like search and name buying as a source. So that's probably the biggest for most folks. And then if you're larger in the online and grad space, the biggest challenge that you have is just trying to break through the noise and fit in a space where we have players that are spending more than $100 million a year. And so it's increased competition, it's nuanced by institution. And for the most part, it's like, how do we win in the next 3 to 12 months rather than in the next 2 to 3 years. Most folks are playing a shorter term game out of necessity. You know, how do I make next fall? So I think it's like, how do we get quick wins? How do we find ways to drive more students without spending more money? Like, how do we get just a little bit more juice out of this thing that we have and that we call marketing and enrollment strategy? So it's different for everybody, but it's definitely all in the same vein.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's good answer. I really appreciate that insight from the get-go. So with the enrollment cliff, let's talk about that a little bit more. It's been looming and people have been talking about it for years, but it's finally here with the declining birth rates leading to fewer traditional age students. What strategies have you seen work for institutions to counteract this trend?
Yeah, there's a few things. So at the like a more strategic level, I would say that you have to double down on what's working. So often in higher ed, the answer to how do we grow is let's do more things, but not increase the size of the team. And so most folks that I know that are marketers or in enrollment and recruitment are doing more and more, and that spreads people really thin, and that's a lack of focus, and that's a huge mistake. And so really the first strategy is doubling down on your winners. And for most folks, that means investing more in your own backyard. The majority of traditional undergraduate institutions recruit within a few hundred miles as the majority source. Some aren't, you know, it's unique to everybody, but most institutions we partner with, it's an answer of like, how can we yield more from the high schools and the zip codes that already drive our top performers? And so like, if we can look and see that we're yielding disproportionately higher conversion rates in some markets, how do we spend more there rather than thinking we can make up for a decline in our own backyard by investing out of state? You can do that, but it's hard, right? To get families to come and take a visit. So first is double down on the audiences that work the best for you. The second is double down on the events in the funnel that make the biggest difference. So for most folks, that's things like admitted student day or visit welcome weekends. You know, how can you increase the yield of that? I was talking to somebody 2 days ago that was talking about the fact that they yield a shocking 70% of campus visitors actually yield to enrollment, which is even higher than I've normally heard. That's extremely impressive. And so then it's really simple. It's how do we get more campus visitors? And so look at your yield for those key events, whether that's visits, whether that's an admitted student day or a welcome weekend, that strategy works. Then the third one I'd say is for traditional undergrad recruitment in particular is make sure that you're leveraging digital marketing. There's still a lot of schools out there that are driving undergraduate enrollment entirely with like list and name buys and then organic, and then their recruiters going out to events. You know, we're able to spend money on Facebook today to drive virtual campus visits and on-campus RSVPs for campus visits. And you can actually get a cost per visit RSVP from a Meta and an Instagram campaign. And so more and more schools are investing in digital to supplement their undergraduate recruitment strategy. Those are just a few, kind of the ones that come to mind first of the things that I'm seeing for folks that are still able to drive growth.
Wow, yeah, double down on what's working best. So I've, you know, we've heard about the trend with Northeast and Midwest being primarily affected by the enrollment cliff, and then there's a rise in online education programs. But I've heard some stats that people that enroll in these online schools, online departments, that they come from within 50 to 100 mile radius. Is this something you've heard as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're seeing more and more that it's not a nationwide trend that's equal. Mm-hmm. One of the best charts I had seen was looking at the demographic enrollment changes for high school graduates by state. Mm-hmm. There are states where it's growing. Like there are states today where you can say if you majority recruit in state, you may not even have a demographic cliff. There are states in this country that are growing. Then there's others like California that are really seeing a significant cliff. And so it's I guess I would distill it as like the enrollment cliff is not created equal. And that really means that you need to, yes, be aware of the industry trend, but more importantly, mm-hmm. understand the nuances of how it impacts you and your institution. California's hit very hard, areas of the Northwest. Southeast is not. Southeast is quite strong and growing. And so I think it's important that like your strategy needs to be tailored to you, not to the industry, because mm-hmm. even though our institutions are all quite similar, they're also very different from a recruitment perspective.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the search cliff, because you touched on it a little bit as well, the steep drop in numbers of high school students' names available for purchase by colleges and universities with the newly implemented privacy laws, as well as the shift in SAT and ACT testing post-COVID. How can hired marketing teams address these problems?
Yeah, this is a huge problem for undergraduate recruitment, for the decline in overall list volume and in list quality due to the new federal regulations around privacy. So the first thing is like make sure you understand the caliber and quantity of the list you can still acquire. Names are certainly still available, just not as many and not as high quality. So first, make sure you're getting all that you can. Second, like don't be shy about testing out some new list sources. So like don't go with just a single partner. See if you can supplement in other areas. That's helpful too. I also think it's important to think about online discovery. So, you know, whether you have platforms like Niche and many others like it out there that are really like a third party front door where people are going to learn about different institutions and browse them. Those platforms can be great and supplemental because that's folks that are sort of opting in based on their behavior. That's particularly helpful. And then the other one I'll say is parent specific campaigns are increasingly important. We have a partner right now that we've been piloting an RFI campaign, so like a request for information campaign that's specifically to parents and that parents are willing to RFI on behalf of their children, and parents are much easier to target in digital. So like you can't just make up for your list by decline with digital marketing because each platform has varying age restrictions. And so some of them don't let you only loosely target under 18. Some like TikTok let you target 16 to 18. And it just gets different by platform, but you're not able to target in digital the way that you can with list buying, but you can target parents quite well actually. And so I would say make sure you're doing strong retargeting off your website and focusing on increasing the conversion of the organic that you have. Make sure you're doing digital campaigns overall. Make sure that you have digital campaigns that are driving to campus visits and to virtual tours. Make sure that you have digital campaigns specific to parents. Test out some alternative list sources. Make sure you're leveraging things like Niche, in particular leveraging like their direct admission platform option. And like the answer to how you're going to make up for this one decline in a single source, which is list and name buying, is going to have to be made up in multiple other places. And so there is not a single answer of like, well, now that list buying has declined, we do this one thing. We unfortunately have to do four or five different things to try to make up for that.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to perception, right, the public perception of higher education is changing as well, on top of all the other things. And we've seen growing skepticism about the value of a degree. You mentioned about the importance of talking to parents. How can institutions reshape their messaging to better communicate the impact and the ROI to prospective students and their parents?
Yeah, it's such a great question. So the ROI conversation is super important, and you need to think about it both objectively and subjectively. So from an objective perspective, the first thing is your institution is hopefully tracking where your grads go and how they do from a career perspective, and hopefully you have some data that can say something along the lines of 95% of undergraduates, you know, are in a job in their field or working full-time or in a graduate program within 6 months of graduation. So if you have that kind of data, make sure you're making the objective case first. Now, unfortunately, if you're in marketing enrollment, that's not typically your division's responsibility. So you're sort of at the behest of your institution on whether or not they're properly tracking that. But be an advocate for that objective outcome data. Then the second side of things is the subjective piece. And that's an area that's really important, which means that ultimately people are making this decision based on perceived probability of success. So like, how likely am I to be successful? So some of that can be subjective. And so that means, are you telling the stories of your alumni and where they're going in their fields? So a very tactical thing I would recommend to anybody listening, go to your institution's LinkedIn page, go to your alumni tab, and then look at who your top 10 alumni employers are. I was working with an institution once that didn't realize that four of their top five alumni employers were companies like Amazon, Microsoft, really impressive brands. And I was like, this is a story you can tell. You can say, these are the top employers for our alumni, and then just cite LinkedIn. It's available public data. And so if you don't have institutional specific data, you can leverage what's publicly available. So go find that data on LinkedIn that you can leverage, and then ideally tell those alumni stories. So this goes back to classic testimonials and really having a conversation about where people are, showing the success that they've had, but not just a testimonial. It's a big mistake people make. Not just a testimony about your most successful alumni. Mm-hmm. People will go say, oh, this person's like, you know, 50 years old and they're the CEO of this impressive company. Tell the testimonials of someone who's 25 years old who can say, after I graduated, I got into this career field. I felt really prepared. Here's how I've leveraged what I learned. So like, make it more accessible to folks so they understand the bridge between undergraduate or graduate and straight into career. And so that's a key component that I would really encourage folks to think about as well.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning into the show today. I hope you enjoyed so far. Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast, but were just overwhelmed by the sheer amount of work that goes into it? I get it. After producing over 100 episodes for the Education Marketing Leader, there's a lot of time that goes into this, time that most of us simply don't have. And that's where the Education Marketing Leader podcast production service comes into play. Me and my team will take care of the heavy lifting, from scripting, strategy, editing, to promoting. All you have to do is show up, record your episode, share your expertise, connect with your audience, and build your personal brand. So if you've been sitting on a podcast idea, today is the time to act. Reach out to me via DM on LinkedIn, and we'll get you started. And now, back to the episode.
That is such a good point to make it approachable, accessible to the people that are looking at it from the outside in. Because if you spotlight the Tim Tebow's of the world, Florida grad, right? It's untouchable. It's like you can't reach that. But if you have a dad who graduated with two kids, you know, all of a sudden we have the possibilities seem more reachable there.
Yeah, and the only other thing I would add to this too is, as much as possible, make it area of study specific. So when families, whether it's a prospective student or the parent, are assessing an institution and the probability of outcome is specific to program area. And so what I mean by that is, like, if a student specifically wants to study theater, they want to know how theater grads do. So being able to tell them 95% of grads are working within 6 months, that's not that helpful. What they want is the more tangible, let me tell you where our theater grads have gone, or let me tell you where our marketing grads have gone. And so that's difficult because obviously many undergraduate institutions offer well over 100 programs. So I would start with looking at, like, what are your highest volume programs and piloting and testing how you can tell that story better, in particular online, but also within the admission experience. How you can tailor that. Because really that assessment is going to come down to, like, is this program specifically preparing me professionally?
Amazing insights shared. Everybody who's listening, I'm sure you have your notepad out. You want to rewind a little bit, put down those notes, and take everything in that Seth is sharing here. I touched on the dad of two graduating from university with two children, right? There's also a shift towards non-traditional learners to kind of balance the scale of the lesser incoming high school graduates. Yeah. There's also a shift to micro-credentials, online education. Have you seen out there, are institutions adapting fast enough to meet the needs of today's learners, or what should they be doing differently?
It's a great question. So yeah, the non-traditional space is one that's near and dear to my heart. Non-traditional learners actually make up the majority of all higher education students in the country, but they don't get nearly as much attention. And there's been a big shift in how we educate and teach. So the things that institutions are doing well, you know, the shift to micro-credentials and like what the decoupling of the degree has been quite interesting. And I have seen institutions move in that space, but they've been making several big mistakes. The first mistake is that you cannot use paid media to promote courses or micro-credentials, because it's not economically viable in almost every case. And what I mean by that is it costs roughly the same amount for someone to get, let's say, a credential in marketing, like a three-course credential, as it does, it costs the same to recruit that student as it does to recruit them for an undergraduate or a graduate degree in marketing. But an undergrad degree might be 40 grand, a graduate degree might be 25, and all of a sudden that three courses is, you know, 2,500 bucks. And so when you have a cost per acquisition of $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, you're losing money. And so a lot of institutions are launching these micro-credentials and they can't figure out how to promote them. And the reality is there's this theory that micro-credentials are a pathway to the degree. And I want to be very clear, that is a theory. There is no data out there that shows a significant portion of people properly progress from micro-credentials into degrees. Doesn't mean you shouldn't pilot it and try, but the idea of launching a micro-credential to pathway into a degree is really an R&D effort right now in higher ed. It's not a proven strategy or tactic. And so how do you meet the needs of the market? There's a few ways. One is, how can you stack credentials as much as possible? So you still enroll in the undergraduate marketing degree, but within your first four courses, maybe you get a credential in something, maybe you get an associate's degree that stacks into a bachelor's degree. There's those components. The other is understanding that the audience and the acquisition strategy for credentials and individual courses is different. Two audiences that are particularly valuable here. The first is dual enrollment, which means enrolling high school students into your program. This is actually the fastest area of enrollment growth in higher ed today, is dual enrollment. Many states are actually helping fund this. States like Florida put money, tax dollars behind making dual enrollment accessible. So how do you decouple your degree so you can take advantage of the dual enrollment pipeline, both to capture new revenue, but also because a portion of dual enrollment students may ultimately enroll in your institution. So it's also a potential acquisition strategy. The second area in micro-credential is in B2B, so business to business. That is a growing area of attention in higher ed in particular. And so that means partnering with employers that are looking to upskill their employees and finding ways to have offerings that work for them. Now, ultimately, the largest revenue driver is still going to be degrees, but the B2B space is quite competitive. And so one area where you can acquire more partnerships and ideally activate them at a higher rate is by not only offering degrees to employees of a partner institution, but offering them individual courses and micro-credentials. And so having a strong micro-credential portfolio is great for B2B, great for dual enrollment, but for B2C, like business to consumer, it's possible and you can have it out there, but it's quite difficult to put marketing dollars behind growing it. And so you're not going to see scale. Scale comes from dual enrollment business partnerships in the micro-credential space. So I will say I am like pleasantly surprised at how many institutions are moving in this area from an academic perspective, but there's sort of like a knowledge gap right now on that, the fact that the acquisition channels that are available to micro-credentials are fundamentally going to be different than the ones that are available to degrees.
Interesting. So you mentioned earlier that many institutions, colleges, and universities still invest heavily in traditional marketing channels, but digital-first strategies seem to outperform them. What roles do you see performance TV and paid search play in higher ed marketing in the future?
That's a great question. So I always talk about the fact that when you're trying to do recruitment, you want to build from the bottom of the funnel up. And what I mean by that is the marketing funnel. Imagine the bottom of the funnel is high intent shoppers. So people that are online today, Googling, looking for something. And then all the way to the top of the funnel is peer awareness. Someone who doesn't know who you are and someone who may or may not be interested in going to school. And so the first thing that you want to do is you want to start at the bottom of the funnel first. So you always want to spend as much as you can in paid search. Brand search first. So people that are looking for you, branded paid search is folks that search for your name. And then non-branded paid search is search that folks are not looking for your institution. So they might be looking for, like, you know, best online MBA. So you want to start there, because those people that are shopping right now, that is always going to be the best. It's directly attributable. It's easy to track. And it's a population that will take action. Unfortunately, everybody knows that. So it's also like the most competitive. And so it's very difficult sometimes to recruit. Above that next is really paid social, which to me is a blend of awareness and action. And so people can see an ad on Meta or on Instagram or on TikTok, and they can take an action and we can track that behavior and we can drive leads, but also we can just drive overall awareness for the institution. And then above that, we get into really pure awareness. And then within that category of pure awareness, you still have digital and traditional. Digital being streaming audio, streaming video, traditional being like TV, radio, out of home. By and large, you want to be investing in digital first, mostly because it's more targetable. And so the more that you can target your audience, the more relevant your message can be, the higher probability somebody will utilize it. The other thing that digital like awareness provides is better targeting, because most digital awareness platforms allow you to do a couple things. One, you can do retargeting off your website. So like right now today, we're able to drive streaming ads via partners that we have at our shop. So if you go to the institution's website, we can show up on your smart TV at home. So it's still awareness, but it's really tightly targeted to folks who are aware of you already to reinforce behavior. But then above that, if we're doing like a real awareness for digital streaming, we can target by zip code. And zip code's super important because you can see zip code on your RFI forms, on your request for a campus tour form, on the application. And then you can, also oftentimes see that in analytics on your website. And so you can buy media in certain zip codes and not others and do what's called geo holdout strategies. Now, you can't do that with traditional as well. So traditional, you're buying TV. Some markets that are like larger MSA markets let you actually segment, but many of them you're marketing to the whole city. And generally speaking, you're going to be marketing to older audiences that are a little bit lower intent, and it's much harder to target. So there's still reasons to do pure awareness. I'm not totally against occasionally buying a billboard or doing a radio spot or a TV spot, but that's like the last thing we get to. When we think about building our plans, it's like, bottom of the funnel up first, paid search. Let's go after people that are ready to buy now, because it's always going to be better to shop to market people that are currently shopping. Then let's move up to people that we can target that have a high probability of being a shopper with paid social. Mm-hmm. And then from there, as we move into awareness, let's do it as targeted and as measurable as possible, which is typically digital strategies first. And so, you know, I'm not a totally dunk on traditional guy, but I'm just sort of like, it's at the back of the line when it comes to figuring out the strategies and tactics to drive performance.
Mm-hmm. Now, your agency, Canahoma, has grown rapidly by helping colleges and universities increase enrollment. What is one overlooked marketing strategy that schools should be focusing on right now?
So probably the biggest thing I would say is focusing on the fundamentals. It is so easy to chase the new shiny thing. There is no AI vaporware out there that you can just buy and suddenly drive students. The amount of institutions that we partner with and we take over where their digital campaigns are not structured correctly, where they're doing program-specific marketing, so they're putting all their budget behind individual programs, which is very cost inefficient. It's much better to roll those campaigns up to area of study. 10 times as many people search for problems than programs. So an example is, if you have a teaching credential that you're offering, like in the state of California, 10 times as many people are searching for how to become a teacher than they are for a specific type of credential. But a lot of institutions will market every single one. So don't do program-specific marketing nearly as much as you roll that up to area of study. People are looking for best business programs, best grad programs. That's where the majority of the market is still in this like problem phase where they're trying to address that. Making sure your landing pages are strong, that you're leveraging the thank you for RFI page to push to the application, that your website loads quickly. The fundamentals is the piece that people miss. And it's the reason why like every account we've ever taken over has always improved performance, has been the fundamentals. Now, once you have the fundamentals and the foundation there, then it's time to get really creative and kind of push the boundaries on your acquisition strategies. But I found most folks are chasing something new rather than fixing what is broken. That's by far the biggest lesson I think that I've learned over the last 4 years.
Amazing. So higher ed institutions, they often struggle with long-term decision-making cycles and slow innovation. I've talked to a lot of higher ed marketers, always hear about the red tape. What are some quick wins that can be implemented immediately to start revising enrollment declines?
Okay, quick wins. A couple I may have mentioned, but I'm going to repeat so people bust out their paper or not. Number one, make sure your website loads faster. Number two, remove the video from your homepage and replace it with a program finder. A program finder means up in the hero before they scroll, it says find your program, and it lets somebody immediately search, and it bypasses the majority of your web content and gets them right to their program of interest. Make sure that you leverage the thank you for RFI page. So if someone fills out an RFI or fills out a campus visit, most people just say, thank you, we'll be in touch. That's wasted real estate. It's a captive audience. If you can tell someone, do you want to expedite the admission process, begin your application now, right from the thank you for RFI page, we've seen that 25% of people will start the application immediately in the same web session just by focusing on that. I double down on the core events in your funnel and simplify things. Higher ed funnels can be 50 plus stages from inquiry through to start. Only 4 or 5 matter. So like we use a simple funnel for our partners where we focus on inquiry, application start, application complete, admit, basically register, enroll, and start. Just focus on those core areas. Focus on the core events that you have. Refresh your creative and just get more creative. So a lot of times we'll take over an ad account that may have 10 to 15 ad units in it, like individual ads on like a Facebook platform. And we'll bump that up to over 200 to 250 different ad units. Just a higher volume of higher variant creative will outperform because the machines know what they're doing. Like, trust the ad platforms, but feed them more. So more creative is a huge piece that would highly encourage. More video. A lot of folks aren't doing video on paid social, which disproportionately performs way better. And so I'd focus on more, improve your web process, improve the key events in your funnel, focus on just a few key stages. Don't try to improve everything everywhere. Get a higher volume of creative out there, and somewhere across those things. Oh, fix your emails. Mostly do plain text emails. Throw away all those fancy designed emails that you did. People don't want to hear from institutions. They want to hear from individuals. And so you can automate emails that look like they're coming from your head of admissions. So here's your freebie. Take every application that you have that hasn't progressed. So someone who applied and maybe hasn't responded to their acceptance or admission, and send an email that looks like it's just a plain text from your head of admissions. It says, hi, name. And the subject line should just be name, comma, quick question. That subject line. So Seth, comma, quick question. And then they open it up and it says, hi, Seth, I was reviewing my files and I saw that you applied to insert institution recently, but that you haven't responded to your acceptance. I wanted to personally reach out to make sure that my team has gotten in contact with you. If we've dropped the ball, let me know. Thanks, signed so-and-so, VP of admissions. And one, people open it because it's personal. But two, they think that you wrote that personally. And three, they're worried that your team's going to get in trouble for the fact that they didn't contact you. So it creates a social contract where the person receives a response says, oh, actually, thank you so much. I ended up going with another institution. But, you know, your team did reach out. And, like, we'll get 60, 65% response rates on those emails just by creating, like, really simple plain text emails that we insert as blasts into the admissions process that are more calendar and date specific rather than built off of, like, a drip series.
Personalization for the win. While everybody's taking a breath, if you are watching this on YouTube, introduce the puppy behind you real quick.
Oh, yeah, actually, this is Gigi. She's my old rescue dog from Mexico. We just got her a little over a year ago. She's the best, but if she barks later, I'll have to apologize for that. She's a little curmudgeon sometimes.
Beautiful pup. So if you had to predict the bigger shift coming for higher education in the next 3 to 5 years, what would it be, and how can higher ed institutions prepare for them now?
So definitely increased enrollment pressure. So focus on the areas where you can yield the most. We are going to see an increase in closures. COVID delayed a lot of higher ed closures just due to COVID funding that was available for institutions. You know, right now, there's a shocking amount of college universities that are losing money every year, a staggering amount that I've written about in the past. And so I do think we're going to see closures go from one a week to, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 a week at some point soon. And when those institutions start to close, do not let your institutions get wrapped up in M&A unless you're absolutely positive it's the right thing to do. Presidents and boards love to buy dying institutions and think they can fix them just because they're so smart and wise. The research we've done at Canahoma has shown more than 80% of mergers and acquisitions fail in higher ed. So watch out for that. I think we're going to see, unfortunately, a turnover in staff within higher ed. And so if that's you, you know, be really thoughtful about where you're going next. And if you're coming into a new institution, make sure you have the runway to focus on the fundamentals. So I think the broader thing is, like, it's only going to get harder. It's only going to get more complicated, and you're going to get more pressure from the cabinet, the president, and the board. So don't let them sway your behavior as much as possible, meaning, like, make sure if you're coming into a new role or if you're in this current one that you're getting the buy-in you need to execute the things you know you need to do. Then I would say there's going to be a lot of interesting AI tools on the web front in particular, AI chats, AI email integration. So make sure that you have a strong CRM partner that's integrating AI. Mm-hmm. I do think that's going to be significant. I have a call later today with an AI agent admission company that is already having agents doing outbound calls. I've listened into some of those calls. It's really impressive. I don't know that it's quite here, but it's pretty darn close. And so I think AI will be integrated pretty significantly. And then just personally, make sure you're integrating AI into your workflow. You know, like, everybody at my agency all has ChatGPT Pro accounts. We all integrate it into the work that we do. You got to find ways to be as efficient as you possibly can while still controlling the strategy. Don't lose sight of the fundamentals. Still plenty of time to win in this space. A lot of folks are going to do well, but it's going to get really, really noisy, not just out in the industry with the enrollment cliff, but within your own institution with the pressures you're going to hear from folks internally. And just, you know, don't let other people control the narrative. You know what you need to do. Just find ways to get the buy-in so you can.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you're consulting with a university that's struggling with enrollment visibility and brand perception. What's your first move to help them turn things around?
So first one for me is to try to understand how much time we have. So sometimes when institutions come to us, it's like we have an enrollment, visibility, brand perception problem, and like we need to worry about fall and it's February, right? That's a very different situation. And if that's the case, we don't have time to actually fix the brand perception problem at all. We got to get in and just juice the funnel, and it's all CRO, conversion rate optimization. And it's a very different game, and that just buys us time. But let's say you have that problem and you actually have the proper time. I will say there's still nothing more impactful than like a strong brand strategy project for your institution, which typically comes in four phases. The first is research. So trying to find a research partner where you can do good quantitative research to actually establish and understand brand awareness and affinity in your market by audience segments. So that core research first, as well as doing focus groups with your students, with your alumni to understand why they chose you. Then the second phase of that is really strategy development, and that's translating the research into how you solve the problems that the research uncovered. And that's where strategy, you get to make key decisions. Third phase of that is like creative and campaign development. And then the fourth is actually launching that campaign in market. A strong campaign with a high volume of new assets that are real students, real alumni, that's built on a strategy that addresses insights from research still can have the biggest lift for institutions. You know, the challenge is that work is typically anywhere from 9 to 18 months, typically can run you hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so not everybody has that time. But if you do, as much as possible, leverage that. You know, people say they have a brand perception problem, but if they can't quantify or articulate it, you know, it's not really clear what the problem is or where it resides. And oftentimes there's misconceptions within an institution, and sometimes the solution exists. You know, I worked with an institution previously that had a very unique course format, and they had 4-week classes. And we were not talking about that as a significant driver, but when we did the research, it was the number one driver across all audience segments. Mm-hmm. And it was like, oh my gosh, everybody loves this specific thing. Like, well, let's just go out and just talk about that. And we were able to have a significant impact in the market. And that was research-driven insights that informed a strategy that said, we're going to triple down on the value prop that everybody loves. And so, you know, it's dangerous to listen internally and to get the inside baseball feedback from folks. Everybody thinks they know what the problem is. And so if you have the runway, do proper research that informs good, strong strategy that is then brought to life through really impactful, exciting, creative with a high volume of assets that go into a campaign. If you don't have time to do all that, then make sure everybody knows you can't solve the brand problem and you're just going to focus on CRO and we're just going to focus on improving conversion.
Okay. Tell us about Canahoma, how people can connect with you, and especially where did the name come from?
Yeah, absolutely. So Canahoma is the marketing agency that I founded 4 years ago. So it's Canahoma. The name is a combination of Kansas and Oklahoma. And it was the name of a lake house that my family had. My great-great-grandfather moved from Kansas to Western New York in the Finger Lakes. And he bought this beautiful old fishing kind of cabin. And we called it Canahoma. And it was in my family for 99 years. And unfortunately, we had to sell it the year I founded the business. You know, New York taxes on the amount of foot of lakefront and the property. It was beautiful, even if the house was pretty old. And so we had to say goodbye to the cabin. So I named my business when I founded it After Canahoma because it's something that means a lot to me. One. Two, it was a one-word name available, which there's not a lot of those left anymore. And then three, someday far down the road, if everything works out, I'll sell the agency and buy the cabin back. And that's my personal vision. But what is Canahoma is we're essentially a performance marketing, digital marketing agency for colleges and universities. Today, after 4 years, we are 32 full-time employees. We work with 16 institutions on long-term contracts, about another 10 every year on project-based work. The core offering we have is what we see as a better agency of record model. So institutions partner with us to deliver their ad spend across digital channels, Facebook, Meta, Google. We build the websites that are needed to support it. We can manage .edu. We have a 7-person creative team. We own our own production company, so we can do everything from come and do the video and photo shoots to developing all the 250 ads your campaign might need. We have great SEO division, and so we're really a full-service shop for institutions that are looking to drive enrollment. Our sweet spot has been two things, either in the adult online graduate space, and then in particular, smaller private institutions that are trying to do both, drive increased growth online and through grad, as well as still supporting campus. And so it's been a really fun run. I've been loving doing the agency. I get to work with a lot of friends, a lot of people I admire. About half the team has worked with me before, and I get to work with a lot of institutions and folks that I've known for a long time. And so when I founded Canahoma, it was during COVID. I had a kid on the way, but it just felt like there was room in market. A lot of the higher ed shops are really big, and I don't know that they always, I think sometimes they provide a little bit like cookie cutter solutions. And the truth is that like, if you're going to win in a highly competitive market, you need a partner who's going to design solutions that are unique to you. So that's what we've been up to at Canahoma. It's been super fun. We're like almost 4.5 years into this thing. It's kind of crazy to think about, but it's been really, really fun.
That's amazing. If you partner with Seth, you may end up getting a gift
box with a coffee in it as well.
Yeah, we have a great holiday. We do a Canahoma Coffee Roasters gift drop every winter. We do a couple. We have an online swag store. And so I'll say, if you're listening to this, you can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me at canahoma.com, but LinkedIn's probably the best place. I have a newsletter that you can find on our website that I put out weekly. I have a podcast that I do every week with Mallory over at Enrollify. Just find me online. And most importantly, if you want to get it on next year's coffee drop, it's going to be a doozy. So definitely shoot me a note and with your address, and I'll make sure you're on the list.
Awesome episode, Seth. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me. I love the conversation. Really appreciate it.
Take care. And that's a wrap for this episode, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to Education Marketing Leader Podcast this week. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to share it with your friends and your network. And if you ever thought about starting your own podcast, now that you listen to one and you got inspired, reach out to me via DM. We'd love to help you launch your own. We'll take care of everything for you, the scripting, the strategy, the editing, the distribution. All you have to do is show up, connect with your audience, and build your personal brand. So if you're ready for it, let's chat. And for everybody else, we'll see you next time at the Education Marketing Leader Podcast. Take care, friends.